In March 2017, Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali resigned after more than two decades at the EPA, after the White House slated the EPA's Office of Environmental Justice, which he had helped found in the 1990s, for elimination. At EPA, Dr. Santiago Ali served as the Assistant Associate Administrator for Environmental Justice and Senior Advisor for Environmental Justice and Community Revitalization. Mustafa Ali elevated environmental justice issues and worked across federal agencies to strengthen environmental justice policies, programs, and initiatives. He left the EPA in 2017 and is now Senior Vice President of Climate, Environmental Justice, and Community Revitalization for the Hip Hop Caucus in Washington, D.C., a national organization that connects the hip hop community to the civic process to build power and create positive change. Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali joins us from D.C. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I just want to step back a couple of weeks to July 5th, the day after the 4th of July, and you find out that Scott Pruitt is resigning his position at the EPA. Tell us how you found out and what you thought about that.
Yeah, you know, I started getting a lot of text messages and phone calls, and there was just a lot of activity because we had been a part of the Boot Pruitt campaign, and it was a huge amount of energy that had went into that. To, one, first get the attention of the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency to hopefully get him to do the right things. When that wasn't apparent, then it was making sure that, you know, there was a lot of energy in moving him from that position and hopefully getting someone who would do the right things in relationship to public health and the environment.
So you had been at the EPA for 24 years through obviously Republican and Democratic administrations, some more conservative and anti-environment than others, and you had stayed. Tell us what led you to resign, you know, when you did in March 2017.
Yeah, you know, I just took a look at a number of the actions that were going on, both proposals and actual actions, and the budget cuts that they were proposing and moving forward on. And after working in hundreds and hundreds of communities across the country, from Appalachia to the Rust Belt to the Gulf Coast, I knew that the actions that they were moving forward on would be very hurtful and actually devastating to many of the most vulnerable communities, putting their lives in greater jeopardy and actually moving forward on not only shortening some folks' lives, but taking lives away. So I knew that I couldn't be a part of it. I'd been very blessed. I started at the agency as a student and had been mentored by both folks inside of the government, folks in civil rights, folks in the environmental justice movement. And I remembered all of the hard work that those coalitions had put in trying to strengthen things like the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act to make sure that there was actually enforcement happening in their communities to make sure that they were better protected. So I thought about all those people who had dedicated their lives, and I just couldn't be a part of anything that would hurt communities.
And it seemed and seems to be a particular opposition within this administration to the idea of environmental justice, to issues of racial inequality as the impacts of climate change, environmental destruction, pollution have racial disparities in their impacts. Can you talk about, you know, how that was something, if that was something that you were seeing within this administration and within Pruitt's leadership at EPA?
Oh, without a doubt. So, you know, they had moved forward on the elimination of the Office of Environmental Justice, an office that was actually founded out of a set of recommendations from stakeholders, some of our most vulnerable communities, grassroots organizations. So when they talked about ending that, it gave me a clear indication that what folks out there across the country were asking for, they had, you know, no regard for that. Also, those actions that they were doing, I knew it would have disproportionate impacts on communities of color. So, you know, there are over 200,000 people in our country who die prematurely from air pollution. We got about 27 million folks who have asthma, 7 million of those are children. And we know disproportionately African-American and Latinos, kids especially, are the ones that are going to the emergency room and the ones that are losing their lives prematurely. So when folks were talking about you know, rolling back the Clean Power Plan, rolling back the refinery rule, the methane rule, all these various things that they were very, very focused on, they definitely would have a discriminatory effect based upon whom would be most impacted. Now, let's be very clear that all folks across our country are impacted by air pollution and water pollution, but there is a disproportionality that happens for our most vulnerable communities, communities of color, low-income communities, and indigenous populations. So folks should be very focused. I'll share this with you. I was the only senior advisor for environmental justice in the whole federal government. I used to lead the interagency working group that had 17 federal agencies and a couple of White House offices. They still to this day have not put someone into that position. When you don't have someone in that position, you set yourself up to one, have policy that is not reflective of the needs of all folks across the country. When you start to make budget decisions, there's no one who's there advocating for vulnerable communities to make sure that resources are going to those places. So that's why we still have situations like Flint going on. We have the situations with Standing Rock and the pipeline battles that are continually going on across our country. And unfortunately, we are now moving into hurricane season. And all of us saw the devastating impacts that happened in Puerto Rico, that happened in Houston, Texas, in Port Arthur, Texas, and a number of other locations. So when you fail to have an understanding that you need to make sure that our most vulnerable communities are being adequately protected, then you leave our country with this big gap. That then creates a whole set of other problems.
Can you talk about specific policies that did get put forward, deregulation and lack of enforcement that did move forward in the year and 7 or 8 months that Pruitt was in office?
Oh, my goodness.
How much time do you have? I know.
I mean, everything from the things that people hear about. So everyone has heard about the Clean Power Plan and how they've been trying to dismantle that, deconstruct that, which makes no sense, and because the facts are very clear out there. So when you do that, if you're successful in that, then that means that you're going to be putting more carbon into the atmosphere. We know more carbon in the atmosphere heats up the planet, heats up the oceans, more severe storms. So again, the impacts in places like Puerto Rico, in Princeville, North Carolina, a community that was founded by freed slaves and now has had two major hurricanes that have come through and devastated them. You can look at the CAR rule where, you know, the former administration under President Obama tried to increase sort of the mileage that cars get, lessen the amount of matter that was going into the atmosphere. And we know that in our most vulnerable communities is where many of the highways are. That, you know, we can talk about the history of the Federal Highway Administration, some of the decisions that have been made. But when you try and roll back that, then you're also causing additional impacts. You can also flip the coin. So what they've done also is they've cut the enforcement staff, especially those inspectors and agents who go out and make sure that the industries are in compliance, that the information that's being self-reported is true, and also making sure that the cases are being brought against those. So when you begin to lessen the amount of individuals who are doing that work, we also know that in many instances, those are our most vulnerable communities where, you know, many of these entities are located. So again, you are impacting those communities greatly. I mean, we can go down the line and look at the refinery rule and what they've been doing in that space, and then go back to places like Port Arthur, Texas, or the Manchester community in Houston, Texas, where all of these refineries are, where literally when you go there and you roll down the windows of your car, you feel like you're breathing in gasoline fumes. Yeah. So when we're allowing folks to pollute more and there's less enforcement, then you're putting an undue burden on these communities. And that is not only immoral, it shows a lack of humanity. And if you are a faith-based person such as myself, it also shows a lack of spirituality.
I've been to Manchester, and there's an elementary school right in the middle of all of those refineries that you're talking about. So you look over, you're looking at play equipment on which the kids play on at recess in the midst of this intense refinery pollution that just weighs down on top of them. And so there was this now successful campaign to boot Pruitt. and to help force his resignation, which was a national campaign and was successful. And not to diminish that success at all, but to now look forward to his replacement and what that means moving forward, if you can talk about that.
Oh, without a doubt. So let's just talk a little bit about Scott Pruitt for 1 second and sort of the hypocrisy of the moment. And that is that even with all of these egregious behaviors in relationship to policy and the things we've been talking about real impacts in people's lives, that isn't what got him out. It was those scandals, those ethical violations. So we need to also start to begin to take a look at ourselves. And when I say that, I mean as our country, about how we can allow those types of actions around policy that actually do impact people's lives, and how $50 for a condo or, you know, the tens of thousands of dollars for a sound booth. Moving on to Andrew Wheeler, who's now the acting administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Wheeler and myself started at the same time at the agency. We actually were on Capitol Hill around the same times. It's amazing because he has always been someone who was focused on industry, supporting both the coal industry. He was a coal lobbyist. He also worked on oil-related issues, uranium issues, so forth and so on. And of course, my path was in protecting communities, especially our most vulnerable communities. Andrew Wheeler is an extremely intelligent man. He is also someone who will not want the spotlight on him as Scott Pruitt did. And he also understands the levers of power and how policy can be manipulated or strengthened, all these various types of things. So folks have to be very focused on what's going on in relationship to the policy actions inside of the agency and, of course, inside of the overall administration, because many of these are, you know, there are sort of intersection points between both the Department of Agriculture, HUD, CDC, HHS, so forth and so on. And he has been very clear that he is a climate denier. He says that, you know, man may have some small contribution to it, but the science is still not there, which is so untrue. So we have to be very, very sort of vigilant and diligent in making sure that we stay engaged on decisions and actions and people raising their voice and letting folks know that they are going to hold them accountable.
So, go ahead. Our co-host Brian is jumping in.
Well, I guess the question is then what was gained by the Boot Pruitt campaign? If what we have is just someone who has the same deregulatory agenda, who's a climate denialist, who's maybe frankly going to be more effective because he's less visibly corrupt at his job, were there any real gains from latching out to Scott Pruitt?
No, I think there were. I think what you've seen, and maybe it was intentional or unintentional, is that Scott Pruitt began to get more folks to pay attention to both the environment and climate. And by doing that, he has built new coalitions of individuals maybe who were not necessarily working together before or working together in an effective way. So I think that the Boot Pruitt campaign was good in the sense that it highlighted, you know, these types of behaviors that, you know, I work for both Republican and Democratic administrations and administrators over the years, never saw anyone doing the types of activities that I saw him doing. So by no means was he the right person to be leading the agency. Now, we're all very clear that the current Trump administration is going to at least attempt or will be successful in continuing to put folks both at the administrator position, at the regional administrator positions at the Environmental Protection Agency. There are 10 regions across the country who, of course, are going to be aligned with what the president is asking for. But they still have a responsibility to the American citizens to live up to protecting public health and the environment, and people have to continue to push.
Can you talk then about the different experience, the background that Wheeler has, as Brian referenced? He has an insider's experience, whereas Pruitt, his background was in Oklahoma. He was obviously very well connected to the oil and gas industry, including the Oklahoma oil and gas industry, but also nationally, and serviced those interests, but did so quite clumsily, really thought that he was well above the law, it seems, in terms of his personal activities, his professional activities. There was a great New York Daily News cover on the day that Pruitt was ousted that says check his pockets on the way out. Wheeler, it seems, might be less, prone to those type of blatant ethical errors that Pruitt saw himself falling into while still serving very similar groups. Can you talk more about that potential?
Oh, no, without a doubt. I think you hit it right on the head. Acting Administrator Wheeler used to work on Capitol Hill on the Senate side, worked for Inhofe for a number of years, worked on the Environment and Public Works Committee. So he definitely understands, how the sausage is made, if I can say it that way. He also has the relationships with many of the both on the House side and the Senate side. So that's also why it's so important that people get engaged in the civic process and make sure that they're voting in November. I never tell anyone who to vote for, but I do say you should vote for someone who cares about your communities. So that plays a huge role also in how some of these things will move forward. Because if you have a House or on the Senate side who begins to change and they have a focus on these issues, then they also will be able to hold folks accountable. And then the other thing too is the saving grace in much of what is going on is that the work that has been done over the years at the Environmental Protection Agency has been built on strong science and the law. So many of these cases that are currently going on will be playing out over a number of years. And there's been a lot of research and analysis and hard work that went into each one of those. This is a marathon and definitely not a sprint.
Do you think there's going to be anything different that Wheeler's going to have at the top of his agenda that would potentially be somewhat different from what Pruitt's agenda was? So Pruitt, as far as I understood it, had this deeper background in oil and gas compared perhaps to Wheeler's with closer ties to coal. Do you see anything different in what he might be pushing more aggressively towards himself if he takes the helm?
Well, I think there's just more expertise, of course, on some of the things around some of the mining and waste, the coal ash rule, and some of the things that are going on in that space, and of course the Clean Power Plan. Let's be very clear. Wheeler is moving based upon the direction that the president is giving. I've been at the White House. I've advised at the White House before. When you sit down, you're very clear with what leadership is asking for in those senior meetings. So what he is moving forward on will be based upon the direction that the president gives.
And in terms of how the public can respond, what does it mean for the environmental justice movement, with this continuation of Trump policy, as you're saying?
Yeah. Well, for the whole country, actually, but of course, there are greater impacts in communities with environmental justice concerns. We have to stay very focused on the resources. There's never been enough resources sort of directed toward our most vulnerable communities. So we have to stay focused in the budget realm and working with folks to help them to have a better understanding that these issues impact everyone, but especially vulnerable communities, and helping them to also understand the success stories of why investments in these areas and why sort of making sure that the right pieces of statutes and legislation and honoring that is so important. In my resignation letter, I shared with them sort of the offices, the resources, and success stories so that they would have a better understanding of why these issues are important, but also that there's light at the end of the tunnel if they chose to move forward in a positive direction around these issues. Of course, they may have a slightly different way of approaching it, which is fine. But I wanted to make sure that they understood that investing in these communities not only makes sense, but can yield positive results. So I'm hoping that, you know, they will continue, especially as this pressure continues, to do the right thing.
Mustafa Santiago Ali, we have just a couple minutes left. Up till this point, we've been speaking about the leadership of the EPA. Clearly, the EPA lost a lot of institutional history and smarts and a strong advocate when you left. Can you talk about what's happening in the career ranks at the agency? How much bleeding is there of people like yourself? How much lasting change is happening at the institutional level?
Yeah, that's one of the, you know, one of my greatest concerns. And one of the things that I struggled with before I left was that, you know, there, you know, were a handful of really great, dedicated folks around the issue of environmental justice. But overall with the agency, you know, there's been like close to 3,000 people who have now left. So there is that concern. So many of the great scientists who have worked at the agency have now left. A number of folks who were sort of in the enforcement field also have either retired or resigned or moved on. So that is something that we should be really, really focused on and figuring out how we're going to rebuild this when the pendulum swings back in a different direction. I also worry about many of the young people who come into the agency. I was super blessed from coming in as an intern that I had you know, a plethora of folks to help guide me. And you know, to sort of give me time to grow and the information. And I worry about many of the younger people who are there now, you know, if they're going to have that same opportunity.
What does it mean on a day-to-day basis for what the EPA is supposed to be doing that it's now, we've been focused on what it is doing, but what it's not doing that we, you know, sort of take for granted that's happening at this critical federal agency?
Yeah, you know, it's you know, and I talk to literally thousands and thousands of people every month as I'm out across the country speaking and engaging with folks. And, you know, one of the things is that communities have lost confidence in the Environmental Protection Agency. That is from, you know, Appalachia to all across the country. And what that means is that, you know, now the agency no longer, or it's been greatly diminished, having folks from regional offices, having folks from headquarters offices actually out there in communities, at community meetings, at conferences, you know, all those various things that are so critical in building those bridges. It takes years and years, especially with many communities who have, you know, have distrust in the government and, you know, to build that up, to be there, to let people know that you're authentic in the work that you're doing and that you truly care about what's happening in their communities. And that now is eroding. But again, you know, I hope that folks will change the direction that they're going and realize that they only have one responsibility. The administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, in his job title, is protecting public health and the environment. That's what you're supposed to do. So that's why it's so critical for you to be connected to everyday folks with what their needs are, what they're looking for, and also the transparency and the information that can help them to also be a part of the decision-making process.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And we know that the critical work you continue to do at the Hip Hop Caucus will help alleviate some of the damage that's going to be done at the EPA. So thank you, Dr. Mustafa Santiago Ali, for being with us today.